from Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our reporter roundtables, where we talk about the stories making headlines in different parts of the 21st state. Today, we're focusing on Springfield and vicinity. Joining me now is Sean Crawford, managing editor for WUIS NPR Illinois. Sean, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Brian.
Also with us, Dean Olson, senior staff writer at Illinois Times. Dean, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Sean, I want to start on a somber note and talk about the latest on that terrible car crash in Chatham, where a car drove through, literally through, an after-school facility. I understand there's another victim of that episode. What do we know about that?
That's an 8-year-old boy, Bradley Lund, had a Springfield address but went to Chatham Glenwood Schools, and he died this week. He had been injured in that accident, which happened on April 28th, in which a woman driving a vehicle left the roadway, and as you mentioned, she drove through a farm field first and then right through the building, all the way through both sides of the building. Four people, all young people ranging in age from 7 to 18, were killed at the scene. And then also six others, including Bradley Lund, were injured. And as of this week, of course, as I mentioned, he passed away at a hospital here. He had still been suffering with the injuries he'd received that day.
What is the status of the investigation? Do we know more than we did in the immediate week after that?
The last thing the Illinois State Police said on this was they had a news conference a few days later and said that the initial findings of their investigation determined that the woman may have suffered a medical emergency, and no charges have been filed in this case at this point. The state police have turned over the findings of their investigation to the Sangamon County State's Attorney, who will make the final decision on whether or not charges are to be filed. But so far, again, we're more than a month since this occurred, and nothing has happened legally at this point.
And no indication from the state's attorney's office about a timeline for their decision here?
No. What we were told was that they were reviewing the findings of the state police investigation, and we would know more at some point. But as of this time when we're recording this, which is on a Thursday afternoon, we do not know anything further.
All right. That is a story we will continue to follow as it develops. Dean Olson, I want to bring you into the conversation now and shift gears a little bit. You recently had a really interesting story, an in-depth story, focusing on income gaps among Black and white Springfieldians. What is happening there?
The Illinois Times followed up on an in-depth report that was done and came out in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. It was published by Governing Magazine, and it found that Springfield had some of the biggest gaps in income between white and Black in the country. And our look back at that found that not much has changed in the past 6 years. We have some of the biggest gaps between Blacks and whites in the country still, when you look at the poverty rate, median household income, unemployment rates. In fact, the gap between median household income for Blacks in the Springfield metropolitan area is just $33,000, while for whites it's $80,000. And that was, it wasn't first in the country anymore, but it dropped to second place. First was actually Bloomington, Illinois. Many downstate and mid-sized communities in Illinois see these huge gaps, in part because we think that heavy manufacturing base has gone from the Midwest in large part, and also because of segregation that we see that began in the 30s and 40s and persists to this day, which kind of compounds the discrepancies that we see between Black people and white people.
What are some of the sort of consequences of this gap in terms of, you know, the lives people live based on your reporting?
It fuels itself, actually. It's self-perpetuating. And so it results in higher lack of success in education, more challenges for the schools, And it also filters into crime because there's more desperation in certain neighborhoods. It's really hard for the Springfield schools because you have people moving away. If people who are white are moving away from the urban core, and that leaves the school district, which with much less of a tax base to work with. And compounding that in Springfield is the large number of tax exempt properties associated with the state ownership of buildings. Like 20 to 30% of all the property in District 186 is tax exempt. And so when you look at that, what they have in resources, it really makes it a challenging situation. So that's what it results in. It also results in struggles with the city fathers to figure out what to do about this. And there are efforts focused on bringing more jobs and more intervention programs for youth. But those are all challenges that we continue to face in Springfield.
I was struck, particularly, you quoted a woman who works as a substitute teacher at some of the schools in the District 186, which is the Springfield School District. What did she say about what answer she gets when she asks her students what they want to be when they grow up?
Right. They often say, well, I'd like to be a cashier at the supermarket, which is, you know, that's good work. But that just shows that that's a lower wage job. And that shows that often kids, when they're not exposed to all the potential that they could be, they face a pretty narrow view of what they could aspire to. And so that speaks to the segregation and how when you live in a neighborhood and you don't see many people make it out or get a better life, you don't have, that can affect your drive itself. But we do see people become successful, but it just fuels the continuing struggle that we have with as a community. We have a stable employment base, but there's just a lot of people who are chronically like in the underclass, and it's hard to move out of that.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we are in the midst of our Friday reporter roundtable talking about the stories making headlines across Illinois. We are talking today with Dean Olson, who is a senior staff writer for the Illinois Times, the alternative weekly newspaper in Springfield, and Sean Crawford, managing editor at NPR Illinois, WUIS, one of our partner stations. Sean, let's talk a little more about the employment sector in Springfield, which is obviously inextricably tied with state government. The State Department of Central Management Services recently did a count of the total number of state workers. What did they find?
Well, the number has gone up, Brian. The Department of Central Management Services now says the headcount total is above 55,340 people, and that compares to about 5,000 fewer just before the pandemic. So we've gone up a good 10%, roughly 10% during that time. And they credit some different things for that, including the fact that they've been able to fill some jobs in what have been hard-to-fill agencies, such as Department of Children and Family Services, Health and Human Services. Those are the caseworker positions that are put out there. Often difficult to get people to do it, often difficult to keep people in those jobs. They've also revamped the application process to make it a little more streamlined, make it more efficient, they say, so it can move to take a vacancy and get it filled much faster than before. So those are some of the reasons. But yes, you're right. I mean, Springfield it does rely heavily on both the medical community and state government. And state government has been down when it comes to the headcount over the last several years.
Yeah, even the last several decades, I think.
Right.
And Dean Olson, let me ask you, because it relates to another story that you've worked on. You know, despite those figures, it doesn't seem to me that there are a lot more people working downtown Springfield, walking around downtown Springfield, but there are plans to revitalize that area. Talk about that.
Right. For the past 2 to 3 years, there have been intensive conversations between Sangamon County officials, the city of Springfield, and the publicly operated convention center, which is known as the BOS Center, to find ways of expanding that center. That's a place where there are a lot of conventions. They also host a lot of entertainment acts, even sports activities. But they found that the size of the convention center limits often the types of conventions that they can attract and the types of acts they can book. So they're looking at potentially doubling the size of the BOS Center. If anybody's ever gone to Peoria, their Civic Center is quite a bit bigger than Springfield's. And in Champaign, there are also venues that attract bigger acts. So they're trying to find a way to attract a developer who would be willing to both build a modern upper upscale hotel and cooperate with the BOS Center to connect it with that conference center to have more space for bigger conferences, have space to have entertainment acts at the same time. And if that is successful, it could really draw a lot more people downtown, and that would help to draw businesses back downtown, restaurants, bars, you name it, all sorts of activities downtown. The challenge is finding the money to do that. This might be paid for through a combination of sales tax, hotel motel taxes, maybe some state grants, and that's all in the works right now, but we won't know the outcome probably for the next year.
It's interesting. So you mentioned this talk of building a new hotel. There's already a hotel right in that area, except it's been closed now for several months. The Wyndham it's one of the major landmarks on the Springfield skyline. What's the story there?
Yeah, a few months ago, the Wyndham had some sort of accident with with water being released and causing electrical problems and damaging the elevators. We don't know a whole lot about what actually happened because the owner of the hotel, who's based in Texas, is not talking to the media, but the police are investigating this. But that's caused that hotel, which is aging and it needs a lot of work, but it's one of the main convention hotels. It's right across the street from the convention center, and it's been closed, and we really don't know when it's going to reopen. That hotel, which is about 30 stories tall, and it's the tallest building in Springfield other than the state capitol, that building is just key to what's going to happen downtown. It could be the site for where the new hotel goes, but that would require tearing it down. The new hotel also could be built right off of 9th Street, right across from the county courthouse. So a lot of things are up in the air, and it's been frustrating, I think, for the developer of that hotel as well, because he's asked the city council for approval to convert that hotel into high-end residential and hotel rooms, and it has been turned down several times. So now he's not talking to anybody, and all those people are out of work. Some state lawmakers have had to move their reservations because they often stay there during the session. Lobbyists stay there, other people, and that's really a blow to downtown, but it's left a lot of uncertainty.
Interesting. Well, Sean, we're coming to the end of our time together, but one other thing that is going to have a big effect downtown is the rail, rerouting the rail traffic through the city. And I understand that the next phase of federal funding has come through for that, despite these times of austerity and cutbacks.
Right, about $157 million, and they were waiting on this really for the last year plus and hoping to get this to kind of wrap this project up. This has been a major undertaking in Springfield because 3rd Street, which is, you know, to put it in perspective, the state capitol sets off of 2nd Street. 3rd Street is where the rail corridor goes right now, and that includes freight trains, Amtrak. It's very busy, cuts the city in half when these big, long trains come through. So they're moving it over to 10th Street. It's a little bit out of the way, and to make it even better, they have created some overpasses, I should say, in which the trains can travel without disrupting traffic. But they've been working on this for a good 15-plus years, and they think this is the final amount, and hopefully they'll get that done, and probably by 2027 it'll be complete.
About 15 years too late for when I had an apartment across the street from those railroad tracks, waking me up at all hours of the night. All right, Sean, just about 30 seconds left. Lake Springfield turned 90. What's the city doing to mark the occasion?
Well, they had a birthday party for it. Lake Springfield is where the city of Springfield gets its water from. It's its main water source. And then also its main recreation source as well. A lot of boating takes place on the lake. So it's a big deal here in town. And we've talked forever about the possibility of a second water source that has never come to fruition. But it was an opportunity to celebrate the 90th birthday of Lake Springfield. And that happened here just this past week.
All right, maybe we'll get that second water source when we finally get the Springfield monorail. Sean Crawford is managing editor at NPR Illinois, WUIS. Dean Olson, senior staff writer at Illinois Times. Thank you both for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks very much.
Coming up after the break, we'll dive into politics. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.